United States Air Force Training Film, TF-5536A. The Principles of Mechanical Tigers. Refrigeration. I mean mechanical refrigeration. You've probably heard the story of the salesman who was so good, he could sell a refrigerator to an Inuit. It's not true, of course. Inuits don't need refrigerators. They have nature's own way of keeping their food cold. They toss it right in the freezing ocean. But in warmer climes, refrigeration is a part of our daily lives. We use it to keep ourselves comfortable, to keep our food fresh, and our beverages cold. You might say a refrigerator works by taking heat on the inside of the box and getting rid of it on the outside. Refrigeration is the transfer of heat from a place where it is not wanted to a place where it is unobjectionable. There, I said the line. Do I get my tiger now?
This is InfoCast 5000.
Hey, this is the podcast where we dive into the history of things familiar to everybody. Join us as we try to figure out why everything exists.
While we try to figure out why everything exists. And I'm your co-pilot on this journey, and my name is Sam Acuff.
I thought you were going to say Sam Faka for a minute.
I know
you
my really name. I didn't almost forget my last name.
Hey, I'm Baron Malley, and I'm going to need you to man those maps.
Aye, Captain. I'm the map guy.
Yeah.
And you're the...
I'm the guy that comes on the intercom.
This is a good start.
And makes you calm.
Then who's flying the plane?
I don't know. Not us.
All right. Well,
and sure as hell not today. Us.
What are we talking about?
today it's a little something I like to call refrigerators. You
something
might have heard of
you
them.
You like to call some of these. So yeah, some of these episodes are we kind of pick the topics at random. I don't know if you guys know this about us, but sometimes we just get interested in something in the moment and we go, hey, I have always wondered the history of that thing. And we both kind of go into it with no prior interest in it. Some of them are topics that we like from the beginning have always kind of wondered about. And this is one that I have always wondered about, particularly not necessarily the beginning of refrigerators, but what did people do before refrigerators? And we're going to get into that today. Most people probably take the refrigerators for granted. But can you imagine how different life would be without them? We've become so accustomed to living amongst these inanimate violators of nature that it's become lost to many of us what mankind did before they could literally piss in the face of God by eating an ice cream sandwich in the middle of July. But what did we do before everyone had a little cabinet full of winter in their home? How did we preserve food? How did we get ice? Was it even conceivable to have an icy beverage if you couldn't break off an icicle and stir it in your Manhattan right there in your lawn? Join us today as we try to figure out why refrigerators exist.
It's to keep my deli meat nice and cool.
That's
all my ham.
Is that it? Was that the podcast?
That's why refrigerators exist.
Well, to set the proper mindset for refrigerators, I think we need to lead with its two primary functions, as we're going to find how important these two functions become to driving the force of the invention of the refrigerator. And that's food storage, preservation, really, if you want to be specific, and creating ice. If we did go back to the time of hunter-gatherers, this is like prehistoric times, then the notion of storing food wasn't like we think of it today. For the most part, you killed or gathered what you needed and ate all of it, and you sometimes saved a little bit of what you could for a time of need later on down the road. But it wasn't until we became a more agrarian society some 12,000 years ago about that we had to find more robust and effective ways to preserve our yields, kind of create some standards. And we started this journey by doing things like pickling, smoking, and curing foods, ultimately all things that also altered the taste of foods, which is going to be a driving factor later as well. And then there was the much less conventional but vastly superior technique of being able to artificially keep food cool. Despite there being evidence that we knew the benefits of keeping our food cool, it wouldn't be until the very end of the Bronze Age, in fact, that humans would begin to construct places that would allow us to do this artificially. So the best evidence that we have for this all comes from the second millennium BCE, when we began constructing what became to be known as ice houses. And these are a pretty simple idea, although I personally would be hard-pressed to see how long it would take somebody today to figure out a way to preserve ice for a year. In some of these cases, we saw it was for up to 18 months at a fucking time without electricity. And this is places like seasonal places. We're not talking about the Arctics. We're talking about, you know, coastal places, you know, mountainous regions that have a summer and a winter. So how effective would do you think you'd be able to do that? Like if I gave you a block of ice in the middle of winter and like, hey, preserve this till August. I don't think most people could. So we basically figured out that you could dig pits in the ground and throw a bunch of ice in it after slapping it a well-insulated roof on top of it.
Like me a good pit.
You do like a good pit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Better than a hole.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't lay in a hole.
The hierarchy of dwellings, of cave dwellings goes pit, hole, grave. Anyway, so the earliest one I could find was from northern Mesopotamian town of Turkok, I think is how you pronounce that, adjacent to the Euphrates River, built it. Shut up. We're adults.
That's totally right.
We're adults. You try it.
Turkak? I don't know. It's just a funny name. I'm 15 years old. I'm sorry.
It was, and I bring this up only, like, there's almost no information about it other than that it exists and it was discovered by archaeologists. But it's important, I think, in that it's the first. And it was built in 1780 BC by Zimri Lim, the king of Merai, who it's not relevant to refrigerators, but I did do a little bit of research on him. And basically, he was a king for, like, 14 years until Hammurabi fucking killed him. Allegedly. No one knows.
That's a good ring.
Yeah,
he had his time.
I think people only lived to be like 16 back then, so that's solid.
That was most of his life.
Yeah.
He had a great time.
A proper king's life back then. And it didn't, you know, obviously didn't stop with the Mesopotamians. This continues for some time. The Romans would dig large snow pits insulated with grass, chaff, branches and branches of trees and use that as cold storage starting around the 3rd century AD, and they continued this until the fall of the Roman Empire. What was most interesting to me was that there was no evidence that they actually used these pits to store food, though, but it was used to cool drinks, especially wine. More interestingly and more predictably, there was an entire economy built around the ice that they used to preserve such wine, to cool the wine.
Never underestimate the human ability to monetize everything, especially when these goods are an affront to nature, the ice trade being no exception to this rule.
And that term's going to become pretty important later. Is the ice trade. Well, I guess really starting now that there begins to be this ice trade. This would be considered in the history books of a more primitive ice trade. And so during this primitive ice trade, if you weren't a member of the hyper wealthy with your own snow pit, some people did have their own snow pit, but you could imagine they're pretty expensive to build and then to maintain. You needed like slaves, or if you were a part of government, you could conscript soldiers to go to the fucking Alps to get your snow and then march it back by ox-drawn carriages. You could go to what was referred to as a snow shop and purchased imported ice, which usually cost more than the actual wine these people were drinking, cooled by said snow. Fun fact, the snow that was stored at the bottom of the pit was sold at a much higher price than the snow that was skimmed off the top of the pit. So there was even a hierarchy of this snow economy. The snow at the bottom layer was fresh and pure. It was being kept cold by the snow on the top pretty much. So it was brought mostly, you know, sold to like senators and merchants and whatnot.
That's funny that you mention about the snow economy and the premiums on the particular layers of ice, because Romans, for the most part, were drinking this pit snow along with all the dirt and bugs that I guess they could just grab with a handful of snow out of this pit. So
everything I read is this is like pretty gross. Like it's just... I mean, you got nature in your snow, but I guess they were like more into the idea that it was cold than like texture.
Yeah, who knows? You know, they were drinking wine with it, so who knows? Like maybe Caligula was around pissing in the snow or whatever.
Yeah, those fucking old Greeks, they were drinking wine with their feet. They were just having orgies and all the goop was getting in the wine and they didn't care.
Yeah, so there's probably a reason there was a premium on like the top layer of ice. at this point in time.
The premium was on the bottom because that's the pure stuff.
Oh.
Yeah, because all the dirt and shit. And the, like,
oh, I misunderstood what you were saying.
Yeah, the expensive snow was at the bottom because it was being insulated by other snow. People were buying the like insulated snow for a discount.
No, I want the top layer. That's because
you like your wine with pulp.
So
it's like kombucha.
Either way, they did this until Nero came along, and he had a method of placing a chalice with some like a nice actual clean chalice, and he filled it with boiling water, and he placed it inside of the snow, and the boiling water absorbed the heat, and that created ice inside of the chalice. And then he put the ice in whatever wine he wanted.
Oh, Vulcan Nero. Oh.
drinking clean ice.
Well, he was also known.
What a fancy individual.
He was also fucking known for conscripting marathon runners to go to the Alps just to get snow, not to preserve, but just to make sherbet with. And if it all melted, I'm not kidding, if it all melted before they got back, he'd kill the fucking marathon runners.
Oh no, he was a terrible person. He was the same guy that supposedly burned down Rome, right?
Yeah. There's the memes playing the violin and
right,
yeah,
right. Yeah. Although different permutations of the ice house had been kicked around for centuries by this point, the commercial development of ice cooling is peculiarly American. Yeah. Ice demand ramps up around the 1700s in the New World as settlers were confronted with appalling New World summers in which meat spoiled, milk soured, and butter melted into slimy puddles. That's the best kind of butter. But anyway, they struggled to keep things cool.
The only thing I don't understand is maybe because they didn't have such a robust infrastructure in the New World. Because there's places in Europe that have seasons just like America, and there's definitely civilizations that have lived on the same like longitude as places in America and have managed to not have spoiled food. So I don't know what was going on. But regardless, this drove ice to become a necessity, whereas it was before largely seen in history as more of a luxury. Food preservation prior to the advent of mechanical refrigeration was an ongoing problem, however, as Baron mentioned in America. Cooling failures often led to deaths in the New World due to what was recorded as summer complaint. Diarrhea basically was brought on by enteric bacteria.
I'm sorry. I was thinking of summer complaint, though. I was like, it's hot. Like, totally literally.
For instance, an 1838 medical report lists summer complaint as the city's second most frequent cause of death, topped only by consumption. We're jumping ahead a little. We're gonna backtrack a little bit, but that's just the most recent medical record that I could find that talked about summer complaint.
Maybe wear some shorts.
It hurts.
Don't have that problem.
Or just, you know, buy an air conditioner or something stupid, you know? Yeah. I don't know. It was so bad that cookbooks from before the age of mechanical refrigeration recommended that chickens be killed just before dinner and that milk, that is until you're ready to drink it, of course, be kept safely inside of the cow. Which is where I like to keep most of my stuff anyway. So that would have worked for me just fine.
This created a century-long ice boom, especially among East Coast farmers who would set up ponds on their farm. This was specifically to harvest wizard ice.
It's colder than regular ice.
This was specifically to harvest winter ice and sell it to the wealthy because ice, at this point, is still an expensive commodity to procure and store. As a lower budget way of refrigeration, these same farmers would utilize these structures that were called spring houses, which is where cool water from a stream or spring would trickle under shelves or crocks in pans filled with your perishables. They would also store the ice that they harvested from their ponds inside of these spring houses until it was ready to sell at the ice market.
Oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Till it matured, till it aged correctly.
Until, mwah,
you get that correct ice.
So you got that wizard ice.
The wizard ice.
This is so wicked.
In 1802, an Irish-American living in Brookville, Maryland, named Thomas Moore, received a patent for an invention that he called a refrigerator.
This isn't, by the way, the refrigerator as we think of it. He just called it a refrigerator. Yeah.
It's a refrigerator.
But this is where the name comes from.
Yes. This device was a wooden box with a tin chamber inside. Moore placed ice between the wood and the tin and then insulated it with rabbit fur along the exterior. The result was a storage vessel that could keep its contents very cold for relatively long periods.
Now, what it created was a nightmare box.
Why? Because just of the rabbit fur?
A wooden and tin and rabbit carcass lined cold box.
Sometimes he would hide in there and jump out and spook women. Actually, what he did was he used it to transport butter to the market. He did recognize its potential for many other uses, however. This eventually led individuals involved in the cold chain logistics of bringing ice from the frigid north to the balmy south to see the potential of Thomas Moore's invention.
By the way, cold chain logistics is kind of like a turn of phrase that's used to this day about transporting cold goods. So this also, the first refrigerator, this box, was the first inception or the first permutation of cold chain logistics, the first container that could transport cold goods.
It's also the name of my first album I'm going to be putting out. It's a rap album about ice.
Not even humoring that one.
You want to hear some rhymes of ice that I made?
You know what? Later. Let's do it later.
Bryce. So then after Moore's invention, we fast forward 3 years to 1806, when the efforts of a certifiably crazy motherfucker named Frederick Tudor, who spends his life and many lifetimes worth of fortune attempting to sell and store ice down in the tropics, creating what is known as the ice trade.
Yeah, so this is what we were talking about, where by this time, the harvesting of natural ice, like we're talking about with the ponds and lakes, storing them in spring houses and wooden warehouses and then selling them later in hotter months was its own economy. It was a huge economy in America. Anyway, by the 19th century, which is kind of where we're at now, obviously, I think you were saying like 1806 is when we meet Frederick Tudor. New England had a lot of big business in ice harvesting. The idea of selling ice to the uncomfortably hot tropics was the inspiration of the 22-year-old Bostonian entrepreneur, Frederick Tudor. And in 1806, he loaded a ship with 130 tons of Massachusetts ice and dispatched to Martinique in the West Indies. So he went big for his first route. He was not successful. Almost all of the ice had melted in transit, and presumably unbeknownst to Tudor, there were no ice houses erected in Martinique where he was heading. So the recipients of what ice he had left at the end had no place to store it, so it pretty much lasted a day.
Excuse me, Mr. Tudor, was it?
Yeah. My name's Tudor.
Okay. Well, so we have a little issue with the ice. Is that what you're calling it? That you brought down from New England?
Yeah, that ice is wicked pissa, huh?
Yeah, no, we're having some issues. It's 90 degrees outside.
Huh.
And that, yeah, the ice is just melting. It's not staying, you know, in ice form. It's just melting into liquid.
That's weird. That's crazy. You know, that ice was not melted back in Boston. where I'm from. You know, when we packed it in this water car, some people call it a ship. I call it a water car. The ice was not melted. It was wicked crazy.
It's not called a water car. Yeah, no, I mean, I believe you. I believe you. We have like these little chunks of ice here, but it's just water at that point. Like if I wanted water, I could just go out to the ocean and get some water. Why did you just bring a bunch of water to us?
Is water better? You know, my father said this was a bad idea. Did you know I was 22 years old? And you trusted me with this?
Maybe we shouldn't have done that. After this debacle, Frederick ends up in debtor's prison for 2 years. So obviously, this did not stop Tudor from borrowing money from every which where afterward to continue.
You know, you complained about all this water, but ice is just frozen water. So I still delivered exactly what you wanted. It's called cold chain logistics.
Anyway, Frederick, after debtor's prison, he borrows more money to continue on his ice capades. Over the decades, he improves ice preservation techniques, erecting gigantic ice houses in Charleston, Savannah, and New Orleans, as well as throughout the Caribbean.
Hey, I'm Freddie Tudor, motherfucker. I'm wicked smart.
Well, it took you long enough to figure out that we needed ice houses down here.
Do you like apples?
Hold your...
Do you like apples?
I don't think I've had an apple before. Do apples grow in the
Caribbean? Well, then you're going to love what? You're going to love ice. You're going to love this ice.
Wait, do apples grow in the
Caribbean? There's nothing wrong. I need to know. There's nothing matter the wrong with this ice.
It's fine ice.
Goddamn. Yeah, it's fine ice. You look good in some of my ice.
I'm sorry?
You look a lot better if you're wearing some ice.
So by the 1840s, after doing all this, Tudor is granted the title of Ice King. And by continuing to force his ice harvest into warmer climes, Tudor opens up a vacuum in the market for others who also see the profit potential, which kickstarts more mechanical means of refrigeration development as the Industrial Revolution loomed. As a byproduct of the U.S. becoming more and more industrialized by the mid-19th century, and the demand for ice growing in the middle classes, consumption jumps roughly 10 times in certain areas, and prices for ice drop from 6 cents to half a cent a pound.
It's a crazy drop.
Yeah, I don't understand, because going by the laws of supply and demand, it seems like the price would rise.
But there's more people supplying it. There's a greater supply. Yeah. It's okay. Becoming a bigger, you know. It's
that
it's,
makes sense. Yeah, yeah. yeah.
It's like
yeah,
if yeah. more people make pants, there's more pants to buy.
How much
pants? Is simple pants economy, Baron. also, interestingly enough, I found a book that specifically focused on the ice trade during the 19th century, and this author described Tudor being akin to that of a drug pusher with how hard he pushed ice. A little foreshadowing my character there a moment ago. To regions that didn't necessarily even want ice. He just convinced these people that they needed ice so that he could open up, so that he could build his ice houses and then deliver ice to these areas.
Yeah, I can only imagine, because he was the first guy to try to bring ice down to the tropics, I think. Yeah. So he obviously...
Hey, buddy, what's that? Is that a margarita you got there? Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. It look a little better with some ice.
Freddie? You're unrelenting.
I'm the goddamn pushy. Ice king, motherfucker.
Yeah, you have won me over with how pushy you are.
Thank you. And, you know, they say kill him with kindness.
You know what?
I like to say kill him with ice. But so ice, ice at the height of the ice trade rivaled cotton and grain in economic importance in the United States. The first official report on the ice industry, which was conducted a little bit later than this in 1879, estimated that an annual national harvest of 8 million to 10 million tons annually was collected that year. By 1890, that number would then increase to 25 million tons as ice transporting technology improved, much to the probably because of the Ice King. America became a major exporter of ice as well. Laborers would cut thick bricks of ice from atop major lakes and ponds and store them in wooden warehouses, probably referred to as ice houses. The name continues.
So not in their shoes.
Not in their shoes. Why would you do that? Why would you do that?
It's just an idea, okay?
Prime consumers were breweries and meatpacking industries, which would also later become major consumers of primitive mechanical refrigeration units. And by mid-century, 135 commercial ice houses were recorded as lining the Hudson River between New York City and Albany alone. So you can imagine how many were up and down the entire East Coast. And almost every town had its own ice house, from which ice was delivered daily to customers who stored these dripping blocks of ice in what was also known as refrigerators or ice boxes.
Due to the ice boom, ice box manufacturing becomes one of the heavy-hitting industries. By the 1860s, they were becoming a regular household item.
These mid-century models were usually made of mahogany or teak lined with zinc and padded with flannel cork or green baize. The originals were a little more crude, the ones done by Benjamin Moore. They were like made with cedar and made with cheap tin.
Yeah, they had different models ranging for what you wanted to pay for the craftsmanship, I think.
Right, but yeah. The point being is that it became meant to be a staple in your household rather than just like a novelty at this point.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
There was a market, you know, so there was like an Econoline and then there was the upper models. An admiring journalist of the time wrote,
The ice chest is a handsome item of domestic furniture, almost as indispensable as the sofa or the sideboard. What the fuck is a sideboard?
It's a table, Baron. Okay. You fucking, you uncultured fucking Philistine. Oh my God.
Why is it indispensable? I can do without it.
The average ice chest family used about 300 100 pound blocks of ice a year. That can't be right. That was a direct pull. That's in my notes here.
It's got to be 300
100 pound blocks. That's 3,000 pounds of ice a year.
Maybe. I don't know.
No, there's no way, because that's a block a day.
Also,
if they're delivered daily, though, imagine how fucking buff those delivery guys were.
Yeah, and they use those weird
the tongs. Nippers? Yeah, yeah. The nippers. Yep, that's what they're called. Nippers. And these simple ice boxes. So anyway, the final judgment
are
on that.
Are we keeping that sentence or what?
It's probably, yeah, sorry. This is a little bit of an infocast. Who's he, what's it? It's probably 100 blocks. No, they're 100 pound blocks. I think I'm going to stand with 300 100 pound blocks.
I'm going to go with one 300 pound block.
Okay.
That's my take.
Okay. And these simple ice boxes work by having your ice bricks stored in an insulated compartment adjacent to another compartment with the box within the box for food. And I think a lot of people probably know what I'm talking about at this point. There are those wooden chests that were called ice boxes. They weren't electric at all, and you just stored ice in there to keep them cold and insulated your food. It's basically an ice house that you can keep in your house.
As demand continued to increase, harvested ice from the winter seasons was becoming insufficient to meet the demand.
Additionally, there was interest in cutting out the middleman of cold chain logistic companies to drive the cost down even lower. So we have two factors going in here.
Yeah, and it's through this desire to manufacture ice that more than a dozen inventors turned to science. The science of evaporation cooling, refrigeration, and technology finally converges in 1755. A Scottish chemist and physician, Dr. William Cullen, uses a mechanical pump to create a vacuum around diethyl ether. Diethyl ether. It was observed that this caused the ether to boil by absorbing heat from the surrounding air. So when he sucked the vapor into the vacuum, Cullen was left with a small amount of ice.
However, Cullen saw no practical application for this at the time.
There is no practical application.
But later in 1805, American engineer and businessman Oliver Evans described a closed compression refrigeration system that could be used for the production of ice with the use of ether and a vacuum. However, he never actually even built this.
Yeah, he just
came up with the idea.
He just talked about it.
Yeah, but it's important. You know, he saw the financial, you know, how the financial value, the economic value in this machine.
He's the dreamer.
He designed one, but yeah. I think he just didn't have the infrastructure or the know-how to actually build it.
Well, he worked with, I think he just died early before they could come up with it. But he did, the next guy we're going to talk about, Jacob Perkins, they did work together for a short time.
Oh, no way.
On this. Yeah. Yeah. They were partners. So Jacob Perkins
fucking killed Oliver Evans. Yeah. No, I get it.
Yeah, it could be. I'm not, maybe.
Yeah. I didn't know that reading this. So when I read about Perkins, that's interesting.
For all we know, Jacob Perkins kills off his partner, Oliver Evans, takes Oliver's plans and puts them into practice and gets a patent for the first modern refrigerator in 1834. And he develops a means for mechanically producing ice in England after this machine is built.
Do you think he killed him with an ice pick?
That
or like an icicle? Like he made an icicle and then killed him with it poetically?
Maybe that's how it happened. Like he developed the machine and they're both like sitting there in the same room watching it make ice. And he's, wow, that's a pretty
like the guys that created icicle. Reese's peanut butter cups. They created turnover. He killed the other Reese's brother. It was originally going to be called Reese's.
What?
Yeah, you didn't know about that?
What are you talking
about?
We'll talk about that sometime.
But yeah, so Perkins makes an icicle. They come back, they think they're failures, but they come back the next day and there's just one icicle in the middle of the fridge when they open it and they're like, it's beautiful. And then Perkins fucking snaps it off and jams it right through Evan's chest. And Evan's is like, it had to be like this. I'm so proud of you.
It's so cold.
It's so cold. And then Perkins is like, that's the fucking point. And then just boom, kicks the icicle deeper in his chest. Oh, that should be a movie. Fuck yeah.
Anyway, so his machine worked through a constant cycle of evaporation and condensation of refrigerant vapor, which was in this case ether. And this invention was not met with much enthusiasm because at this point the ice harvesting economy was well established and thriving.
Right. This threatened what was basically, as I mentioned earlier, an industry so gigantic that it competed with cotton and wheat. If you can wrap your head around that, of how huge, how many people relied on natural ice harvesting. So it's not that this wasn't an insane invention. It was just a lot of people were like, get that shit out of here. You're going to collapse our economy.
What is most important about this machine in particular is that this is essentially the closed evaporation and condensation system that fridges and air conditioning use today.
I mean, not without some tweaking, but the principle.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah.
It wouldn't be for another 13 years until someone would successfully patent and invent the world's first mechanical ice-making machine, despite the success of Perkins. The Scottish-born Australian journalist and member of Victorian Legislative Council, James Harrison, was obsessed with the prospect of artificially making ice. Despite the harvested ice industry thriving in the States and there being a successful export-import trade in most of Europe at the time, winters in Australia were far too short and warm to properly harvest and enough ice for the year, and it was super cost prohibitive to import ice the way that they did in Europe and other places that got it from America, probably. So building off of Perkinson's earlier refrigerator patent even farther, Harrison went on to create his own mechanical ice-making machine, which began operation in 1851. And then 3 years later, he would make the world's first commercial ice-making machine. And this machine employed a 16-foot flywheel that was belt-driven and produced fucking 6,600 pounds of ice per day. By the 1870s, commercial ice factories that utilized variations on Harrison's artificial ice machines and ammonia refrigerant began competing with the naturally harvested ice industries in both England and America. To paint a picture of where we're at, these were massive, massive warehouses with dunk tanks, like giant vats the size of Olympic swimming pools, cooled by ammonia that is pressurized and pumped through pipes by way of massive engine rooms with hulking electric motors under these tanks. Like, picture entire warehouses with multiple buildings that had these giant tanks that fresh water was then pumped into these brick molds, like gold brick molds, but they're for water. And you pour the water into the molds and dunk them into freezing water until the bricks themselves froze by way of, I guess it would be radiative, like a condensed radiative cooling. Which, you know, the water itself is cooled through this compressive evaporative cooling, but then the ice bricks itself, I guess, would technically, we did a lot of research on different kinds of cooling, so that would be radiative cooling because the transfer of energy from one body to another. Anyway, in these giant water smelting factories, you got giant 100-pound bricks of artificial ice.
Maybe 300 pounds.
I watched a video of the last remaining one in Europe, like, doing one of its last dumps, and it's really fucking cool.
How long ago was that?
The documentary is from like the 80s.
Oh, so fairly recently.
It was running still for 80 years. They opened in 1898. They interviewed the guy who I guess was like the great grandson of the guy that opened it. He's like, I thought my granddaddy thought that the ice was impure from the Netherlands, so we brought it. We made our own artificial ice because it's purer. I think you ran into the same issue that the Romans did, where some of the ice that you got from the naturally harvested ice was kind of dirty, or maybe it tasted weird or whatever. And so they made pure ice with fresh water. But here's the kicker. I don't know if the ice carried the smell, but because of all the ammonia that they use as the refrigerant, apparently these factories smelt like shit. And it was like super strong smell of ammonia and carbon. And I don't, if the bricks just smell like that, yeah, it smelled like cat, like a cat piss ice factory. But maybe the ice was better, like denser or something. I don't know. And then from here, I think it just was catalyzed so quickly. Like once people you know, smelt the blood in the water of this is the future of ice. It was just only a matter of time until it became ineffective to harvest ice and to use these mass, like almost community means. You paid for it, but these like communal means of cooling and gathering your own ice. And it's a short leap to having ice in your own house. For example, it only took, I think, until the 1910s for engineers to be able to shrink those hulking motors that ran Harrison's commercial ice machines down small enough to fit on top of, say, one of those ice boxes that you would have in your home that held the giant bricks of ice. But now that you had that mechanism inside your own house, you didn't need the ice delivery. In fact, it was as early as 1913 that the first electric refrigerator for domestic use was invented by the American Fred W. Wolfe and was called the Domer, which is actually like a domestic refrigerator or something like that. Super confusing name, hard to pronounce. And, the domestic electric refrigerator. So Delmore. Sorry, I found it in my notes. But much like the name, his model was a flop. But one of his innovations, which was the ice cube tray that was included with the fridge, caught on, and we still use that till today. It's like a staple of modern refrigerators.
So other models would follow the Domelry, but there was one major discovery that had to be made before refrigerators could become a household staple. We needed a different refrigerant agent other than the common, more volatile go-tos of the 19th century, which were ammonia, ether, methyl chloride, and sulfur dioxide.
They all sound like things that you can get on you and be okay.
First, because all of these chemicals all gave off a horrible smell, but most importantly, all of them were highly toxic and harmful if there ever was a leak in.
Right, like I was talking about, those massive warehouses smell like cat piss. So people probably weren't thrilled about this giant box that hummed and whirred and made your house smell like cat piss, and then you got some ice out of it.
Except for that one guy.
Yeah, he fucking loved it, buddy. No, he didn't like it because it was putting him out of business. Anyway, in fact, several fatal accidents occurred in the 1920s because of methyl chloride leakage from refrigerators. People started leaving their refrigerators in their backyards, which is, I guess it's not crazy, but it's not convenient either. So a collaborative effort began between three American corporations: Frigidaire, which was a big refrigerator manufacturer, General Motors, and DuPont. DuPont, obviously the famous chemical company, and I'm not sure why General Motors threw their hat in the ring. But they all searched for a less dangerous method of refrigeration. And in 1928, Thomas Midgley Jr., aided by Charles Franklin Kettering, invented a miracle compound called Freon. And coincidentally, in 1928, the General Electric Company decided to enclose this motor and compressor in an airtight container on top of the first ever home refrigerator, which led to the unit's namesake, the monitor top refrigerator, which revolutionized the home refrigerator and also aided with this miracle chemical, which they obviously just got the rights to somehow, called Freon. This made it the most popular home refrigerator at the time and still resembles basically what makes up all modern refrigerators today, although the active components that used to be on that monitor top are now discreetly located along the backside of your fridge and underneath your modern fridge. So if you want to know what we're talking about, pull your fridge out, unplug it, pull it out in your kitchen, and take a look. Yeah, rip the back off.
Get out your drill.
Take a peek, and it's like back in time. It's like looking back in 1928. It's the same fucking thing.
Apparently, these monitor top refrigerators were still... apparently, they were loud, number one. And they would also emit quite a bit of heat, like an uncomfortable amount of heat. People still complained about these things.
Well, it was an older, you know, machine. We've clearly gotten better. But also,
sure.
In their defense, have you ever touched the compressor on a refrigerator?
Yeah.
You think it gets hot. It still gets hot.
Yeah.
They just put it in the bottom where you can't get hot.
Sometimes.
That's why mice like to live under refrigerators, because it's nice and cozy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've touched a lot of things that I shouldn't. Have compressors are one of those things.
Like blood on the kitchen floor. Listen to Dirty Bits and we'll find out about that next week. But
yeah, that's the first thing I'm talking about, buddy.
Anyway, that's refrigerators. That's how we got to refrigerators.
Can you tell me the story again?
I don't think we have time, man.
Okay. No,
but I can hook you up with my buddy Freddie Tudor.
What does Freddie Tudor have to say about it?
I don't know, man. You got to listen to podcasts again.
Is that it?
Yeah, it's going to come out next week, man. Listen to podcast. I'm a nice guy. I'm not a podcast guy. I'm not much of a storyteller.
Hey, listen. I practiced my Boston accent for prior to this podcast as well. And this is my Boston accent.
Hey, you look so proud of yourself.
You like potatoes? You like, how about them potatoes?
I wish that was the line from the movie. Hey, you like potatoes? How about them potatoes?
He just smash. Oh,
can I? He just shows him a potato.
Okay, we can cut this, but I'm telling the story.
Okay.
So my parents knew that early on that I was into art. So I was given many different art projects, many different art mediums to work with when I was a kid. One of them, I just had like a bucket of clay that I could mess around with. And I discovered way too late in my development, probably when I was like 12 or 13 years old, that clay, when thrown against a wall, would stick to the wall for a minute and then like fall off. And so eventually I decided that I lived on the second story, by the way, that throwing this clay at a window would produce the same effect. And I broke my fucking window. I'm just picturing like somebody smashing a potato against the window.
More importantly, I think what you're getting at is Good Will Hunting would have been a different movie if he broke that window. Would have derailed the whole plot.
Yeah, he would have been sued for property damage.
He probably would have hurt someone. You know, he would have been tied up in court for years on assault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the way refrigerators go.
All right. So
thanks for listening, everybody.
I that was a good one. I liked it. It was dense. It was a lot of information, a lot of characters. I hope it was easy to follow, but we had a lot of fun, and I'm satisfied with our discoveries. I'm How Perkins, satisfying. By the way. I'm the Perkins to your what's his name? Evans.
Wait, are you the guy that gets killed, or are you the guy that kills?
Oh yeah, buddy.
Which one?
I'm the killer.
No. See, I'm the one you would least suspect, and therefore I'm actually the killer.
Yep. Did you do that for effect? Did you bump the mic for effect?
That's a pretty good sound effect, actually. I kind of like that.
All right, so where are we on social media, Baron? Did not realize you finished all of your beers. That makes sense.
Yeah. So social media right now, I have a Reddit account. You can look me up at not_really_Greg, or you can email me at infocast5000@gmail.com. But we also...
He's not really Greg.
I'm not. And people need to know that. And we also need to figure out more social media.
No, we're fine. Find me on InfoCast5000 on Instagram. I've been lacking a little bit, but I promise I'm coming back. Life is just so crazy these days, and I'm finding it hard to post all the time. I'm sure you guys can relate. But I love when you guys respond when I do, and I promise you there will be more coming.
You won't give me the password so I can do posts.
Never. Never, ever, ever will you get my password. Because I use the same password for everything, so I'm kind of giving you the box of my life.
But what do you think I'm going to do?
You just said that you're the last one to suspect. You said that you're the one that kills me.
You wouldn't suspect me.
All right.
Doing anything. Anyway, we'll see you next week with the Dirty Bits, everybody.
Enjoy your refrigerators, and don't let your best friend stab you with an ice pick.
Bye-bye.
Bye.